Welcome back. And here I thought that Martha Stewart was the only one that called marmalade marmalade. Well, Patti LaBelle has disabused me of that. Marmalade marmalade. Let's call the whole thing off. I just wanted to, before we get back to our conversation with Dr. William Marone, this is important stuff, I got to tell you. And I'm happy that we're doing this program. It's not easy to listen to, but it's sometimes, you know, those are the important programs. I wanted to just give a quick update. Earlier in the program, we were talking about the Ark of the Covenant with Rabbi Harry Moskoff, and he just sent me an email and wanted to mention that the it's about the Ark Report Media Project. And he says that he is on the verge of a new TV series with a major network. He's currently working with a Beverly Hills production company, getting the permits and access arrangements to actually go in and explore and excavate some of these sites in and around the Temple Mount where clues to the Ark of the Covenant may be found. And again, those who want to be part of it and contribute may do so by writing to him at Harry H. Moskoff, M-O-S-K-O-F-F, care of the Ark Report Project. Again, it's Post Office Box 400, Bet Shemesh, that's capital B-E-T, new word, Shemesh, capital S-H-E-M-E-S-H, that's Bet Shemesh, Israel, 9904606. Again, that's the Ark Report Media Project. I also wanted to share an email with you. This is from Curtis, and he says, I'm currently listening to the show. I had been on fentanyl, ketamine, and oxycodone. At the very end of 22 years of addiction and treatment, my insurance was paying out $7,000 a month for these drugs. When I finally went to rehab 3 years ago, the head of clinic was shocked that I was still standing alive. I've been drug-free for 3 years after discovering a process called PSTIM, P-S-T-I-M, PSTIM. It's a process which rewires your brain to handle pain naturally. I swear by it. I just believe that the medical field does not want to really find the right answer. Thank you, Curtis, for that. We'll get back to our conversation with Dr. William Marone and your phone calls, questions, and comments as well. But before that, just a reminder, tonight on Coast to Coast AM, heading into, Monday night, heading into Tuesday morning. In the first half, George Norrie will speak with a Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter, Matt Richtel. Matt Richtel, known for his explorations of how technology use impacts human behavior, and they'll discuss the extraordinary and insidious ways in which everyday interaction with devices is changing you, your relationships, your habits, and maybe your brain. In the second half, Edward Bruce Bunyan, a clinical psychologist and director of behavioral medicine at the University of Massachusetts Health Science Services, a student of Swami, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the last name. He's a student of a Swami anyway, and he'll detail his work tracking shared dream patterns in families, telepathic connections between family members, and the neuroscience behind meditation practices, breathing exercises, and yoga postures. Wow, fascinating. Stay tuned for that. Whoops. I'll be definitely tuning in. That's tonight into Tuesday morning on Coast to Coast AM. All right, back with more of Dr. William Marone and your questions and comments on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We are here with Dr. William Marone. I wanted to get your take on Curtis's email. Specifically, he talks about this process called PSTIM, a process which rewires your brain to handle pain naturally. What do you know about PSTIM, Dr. Marone?
I know a lot about PSTIM. I chose not to use it. I use one of its competitors called AlphaStim. It's based off of the fact that addiction and some pain has rewired your brain, because the brain is plastic. And what we really need to do is to set the messages that go back to the brain to unlearn pain impulses. PSTIM is a device that goes on the back of the ear like a hearing aid, and PSTIM is attached to some of the facial nerves on the side of the face, and it's hooked up with a battery, and it sends impulses that have what you would call as an algorithm, it's the same thing as my device, but my device comes from the competitor. It hooks on to earlobes, and instead of being attached to facial nerves, it attaches to the trigeminal nerve and the auricular nerve. Both devices send algorithms to the brain. Now, remember when we were talking and you asked me about Barbara, what are you going to do about Barbara? And I said, well, Barbara doesn't have tolerance and Barbara doesn't have dependence. So we need to find a reason to include Barbara's population in the plan. Well, these people who have been on these narcotics for a long time have had the narcotics rewire their brains. So the first thing we need to do is get them off, but you don't want them in withdrawal and you don't want them to have pain. So we need to reach out with other modes, with other therapies. In this case, it's a procedure, not a drug. And that's why I like it. I like the P-STIM idea and I like the Alpha-STIM idea, but I just chose not to go with P-STIM because I couldn't find insurance companies that would pay for it. And I didn't have a patient base that had the cash that was readily available. And I'm giving away the Alpha-STIM for free, but I still get counseling and other visits with it. So an algorithm goes from a computer chip to the brain electrically. And instead of a square wave function that repeats over and over and over, that's the same frequency and the same amplitude, it mixes it up. It's kind of like disco dancing, you know, a little bit of KC Sunshine Band, a little Bee Gees, a little Bruce Springsteen, and all these different electrical impulses go to the brain, and the brain rewires to unlearn that same pain impulse over and over and over. And one of the reasons that P-STIM would work and that Alpha-STIM would work, and I don't endorse any of these products on your show, but as a pain doctor, I know what they are, is I talked about the brain's very plastic, and when it learns these pain messages, they're not much different than the same message that one learns with tolerance and dependence from substance use disorder. And we need to change the brain in pain patients and in addiction patients. And rewiring it is part of the success, that we can use medications temporarily to stabilize the brain, and in one case, you use a device to stimulate it. In the other case, you begin to use family and jobs and counseling to reignite normal dopamine. These people have to relearn pleasure. And part of Narcotics Anonymous is to get people drug-free and get them a sponsor and get them counseling. And that's an important part of even the methadone clinics and the Suboxones and the Vivitrols. Is none of that matters if you don't have counseling. None of that matters unless you have a psychosocial stimulant that brings you positive reinforcement, because we're trying to get drugs out of people and get people to relearn pleasure through normal levels of dopamine and human interaction. And
all right.
P-STIM does that.
Not surprisingly, you have lit up the phone line, so let's dive in. On the wild card line, Grace is in Boston, Massachusetts. Grace, welcome to Coast to Coast. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And Dr. Moran, I appreciate you being so brave to choose to share with a lot of us, because I can tell you, living up here in Boston, between watching the zombie state of so many people going to these clinics for treatment in the morning, only to see them back in the afternoon going out for more drugs, or going to the supermarket and having my butcher tell me about his daughter that just passed away at 38, becoming addicted. My question is, I'm almost half a century in age, and I remember when my sister had a baby, she was given the medication for a C-section. And I remember there was a huge lawsuit up here because they found that the doctors had given those C-section, I forget what it's called, to a lot of women, and it wasn't necessary. It was for pain. I'm curious, over time, when medications given to people for pain, do their own children and their own system sort of recreate, as you said, algorithms, or is there neurotransmitters in our system that begin to become addicted to other little components of things, whether it's an Advil, and over time we're finding more and more people becoming addicted. And then I'm going to take my answer off the line, but more importantly, what can I do up here to help with this?
Thank you, Grace.
The most important thing you can do is to try to reduce the stigma that people with substance use disorder and addiction, and the people that have pain, to reduce the stigma that they have to deal with from the insurance companies and from employers and from society, because they're not going to come out and get help because they're afraid people are going to take things away from them, like Barbara, they're going to take away her pain meds. People won't come out, people that are addicted. So if we try to reduce the stigma and open up, just like when HIV came out in the 80s, we were able to reduce the stigma, and we brought medicine and counseling, and there was success in treating this. And this is kind of where we're at right now. And the idea that can we be addicted to other little things here and there? Well, the addiction that we find with opioids that leads people down a path that they start when they're they deliver a baby and the OB gives them hydrocodone or Norco or morphine, and they just never stop it. And 2 years later, a woman says, if I stop this stuff, I get sick. We need to broaden our concept of getting these people help and getting them counseling to relearn pleasure and take out the opportunity of fear. They all fear something. That's why they go back. And pain patients are afraid to say they're doing better, so they always tell the doctor they're doing worse because they don't want to lose their medicine.
All right, I want to move quickly here, if I could move on to the next caller. Thank you, Grace. Wild card again, and it's Steve in Lockport, New York. Steve, good morning.
Yep, thanks for taking my call. Doctor, one question. Well, actually, two. First question is, have you ever had any kind of back surgery?
I've had back injuries and knee injuries, but I haven't had the surgery.
Okay, I am fused. It's 10 levels in my back, thoracic 2 through 10, cervical 5, 6, and 7. I've been off work since 2001. I've been on these pills since then. I take them as they're, you know, prescribed to me. I don't abuse them. I don't sell them. I don't give them away. If they stopped me today, I would still never, ever go out and seek heroin to replace that with, okay? And I want to ask you something. Did you see America's War on Drugs when it was on the History Channel about a month ago? It was a three-night series. If you saw that, you know, and all the other callers out there know, they come right out and said that the heroin was being brought into the United States by our military. It was our own government. It went right up to the top of our government. Those are the people that have everybody hooked on this heroin. And the only ones I see that are dying around here in Buffalo, New York, where I'm from, are the people that are on heroin and those fentanyl patches. They're shoving those fentanyl patches up holes where they shouldn't be, okay? I never, ever have heard one story of anybody dying from a pain pill. And thank you for having my call, and I'll take your response off the air.
All right, Steve, thank you for that. Dr. Marone, your reply.
All right. Well, if we look back at 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, and 2015, the CDC has a significant portion of opioid overdose deaths that are related to prescription pills that are either accidental or diverted or misused, as high as in 2015, prescription opioids are responsible for 20,000 deaths, just slightly more than heroin. But the idea is that we need to be safer, and the medical system is broken. We are trying to stop people from dying of drug overdose death. We need to rethink this system to offer everybody the highest quality medicine, but stop the dying. That's the first thing. Stop the hemorrhage. Stop the dying. As part of the answer, we have to consider our chronic pain patients.
All right, wild card line again. Paul is in Jefferson City, Missouri. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Good morning. First of all, I find it hilarious that somebody is telling me what I can put in my own body, first of all. And up until a certain point in our nation's history, we didn't have these laws that prohibited these drugs. I'm a chronic pain patient over 3 decades, was described as a model patient by my physician. I went through all the steps you would expect prior to settling on long-term opiates. And since my physician left town, I've been without meds for years, meds that I need. And I don't really know what is wrong with not being in pain. And the idea that you can go down to any doctor and get opiates prescribed to you is ludicrous. It is virtually impossible. Most doctors don't want to mess with it because it's such a hassle, because they get called by the pharmacist and waste their time when they could be making money seeing other patients, plus being hassled by the authorities. Often when I would have a script, I couldn't get it filled because the DEA artificially restricted the distribution of these meds, at the same time saying they wanted all legitimate patients to receive the relief they needed. And the idea that it's terrible to be addicted to something that makes you feel better, I don't understand that either. If you are on these meds for any period of time, you become physically addicted. It's just a fact. And I was lucky enough that I only used it when I absolutely had to, and I didn't have to increase dosage all the time like most patients. In fact, I had a stack of unfilled scripts. And this whole thing about hysteria about opiate use is very detrimental to people like myself who depend on these meds.
All right, I appreciate the call. Let me get, while time permits, let me get Dr. Marone in here to respond, because Paul is painting a very different picture.
We can say, we can go back to the same arguments from Barbara. If you're not tolerant and you're not dependent and it hasn't created a maladaptive pattern, then you're not part of the problem. But there are people that are overdosing and dying. And this caller actually said that he had to stop or he was able to come off them. Well, more power to him. But to say that it's hard to find people prescribing now, yeah, in 2017, the DEA's come down hard on people, the state medical societies, the state pharmacy boards. They've got doctors scared like rabbits. Overprescribing is a documented, evidence-based fact in, like, the Baltimore Sun and the Boston Globe and the New York Times. And the death curve that you see, if you buy my book and you look at the statistics, prescribing precedes opioid overdose deaths. And it takes us as a nation from 8, 9, or 10,000 deaths a year up to 40 or 50,000. And it's a parallel curve. So you have to look at the data. I know the patient is saying exactly what he feels, but the History Channel is not evidence-based medicine.
All right. I appreciate the call, Paul, in Jefferson City. We are coming up on a break. We've got a lot of calls. We want to try to get through to as many of them as we can, and we'll do just that on the other side. My name is Richard Serrett. You're listening to Coast AM, and we are going into the break. Let's see. Who do we have up here? Oh, it's Jeff Lynn and Alone in the Universe. Stay with us. There she is, my late-night muse, Kim Carnes. And when you hear her, you know we're into the home stretch, and I cannot believe how the time has flown by. Just a reminder, what great value the Coast Insiders Club is, if you're a fan of the show. It also makes a great gift, 15 cents a day. Think about that, just 15 cents a day. You get over 1,800 past coast-to-coast shows for immediate download. You get a high-quality live broadcast. You get the podcasts, automatic downloads of current shows, through iTunes or the Android and iPhone apps, as well as access to the twice monthly live chat sessions. And it's real simple to become a member of the Coast Insider Club. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. Back with more of my conversation with Dr. William Marone on the opioid epidemic and your questions and comments. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back on Coast to Coast AM. And a final flurry of calls for Dr. William Marone as we discuss the opioid epidemic. And we'll go to Washington State and say hi to Jeffrey. Good morning. Welcome to Coast, Jeffrey.
Hi, Richard. Thank you so much. This is Jeff from Lifers, the movie. And I was in Colorado, and I was filming a new project that they had me come in. Project 22 vets kill themselves every day with opiates, and they found a receptor at the New Mexico University for the post-traumatic syndrome, PTSD, and I'd like to address that and say that they're doing a great job in Colorado because it's legal to test patients there.
All right. Did you want to respond to that, Dr. Marone?
The most important thing is opioids have played a very large part in returning veterans. PTSD veterans are at higher risk for opioid overdose deaths, so we really need to offer them counseling, low-risk opioid solutions, and alternatives. And that's an example of where PTSD is going to take us in the general society. Research in this area is really booming, but it also is going to give us answers for the rest of the people. And I hope to see more of that coming from the Veterans Administration.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey. Annie is in Alabama. Good morning, Annie. Go ahead.
Thank you. Dr. Moran, why, please tell me, do doctors want to increase the toxicity of opioids by prescribing the version of it that has acetaminophen added when patients already have some liver damage and they don't want to give the plain unadulterated version of the opioid? Why do they want to push this Tylenol version on people? Please tell me.
Here's the simple answer to that. The large dose extended release hydrocodones and oxycodones scare the doctors so that they think they can give a lower dose hydrocodone with Tylenol and they can get a lower dose oxycodone with Tylenol. And that way you have two different molecules that are offering different pain pathway treatments. And it's the lack of knowledge. It comes back as to how do the doctors create addiction in people? It's the lack of knowledge. How do doctors put people at risk for overdose? It always comes back to the lack of knowledge. Lack of formal training, medical school and residency is deficient.
Thank you for that, Annie. Next up on the international line is Rob in Vancouver. Rob, go ahead. Vancouver, Canada.
Hi, how you doing tonight? I want to make a couple comments, or a quick comment about Vancouver up here, and I got to try to stay calm because this makes me so angry. Vancouver is kind of we have a big problem up here with opioids, and it's gotten completely out of hand. And I think this notion of saying, well, we got to address the prescription, aspect to reduce deaths, has the potential to, and here in BC, which is a government-run medical system, has become completely out of control. I mean, our system's in a panic here, and doctors do not want to touch opioids with a 10-foot pole. I had an operation recently on my nose, and I'll tell you, in post-op, I was having problems. The doctor prescribed oxycodone for me, and I know it doesn't work. So I asked the nurse for hydromorphone, and this became a huge problem in post-op, right, which is insanity. And then finally I got the hydromorphone, and I wanted a higher dose, and that became a problem. I'm sitting in post-op, and I'm getting lectured on, addiction, and we don't want to prescribe too much because then, the authorities are going to ask us what we're doing. I mean, it's absolute insanity. And then, through my recovery period, I'd go to my GP to get a refill, and his answer was, oh, I'm not touching it. You know, you want to refill, you better go to the surgeon. He's the guy who did the surgery to you, so go get him. And so I got to track him down. He doesn't want to prescribe Oxycontin. He, you know, offers this Tramadol, which is what the other caller just referred to with the acetaminophen mixture. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And I've been in the financial industry for 20-plus years, have never had a drug problem. And every time I go talk to someone, I'm getting lectured about this. And, you know, I'm not going to run down and shoot heroin, but, I mean, I was looking for other options, you know, to get some pain relief. There's so many people I talk to who are afraid, even when they're going into operation, am I going to get the drugs, right? And, you know, there are some people who are concerned that, you know, what happens if they cut me off? I mean, here, there's so many people. I volunteer in the what's called the Downtown East Side, where we have lots of addicts. And so many people there tell me they turn to street drugs because they got cut off, street drugs stopped working, and they moved on to heroin. So I just wanted to mention that say, you know what, I don't know if this approach of just attacking the prescription aspect of it really is going to do much. I think it causes a lot of problems.
All right, Rob, thank you. We're hearing this time and time again from callers and in some of the emails, Dr. Marone, and that is because, you know, I'm not addicted, and but I'm getting grief from my physician. It seems to be fairly inconsistent. We do have epicenters where there is a problem, and we have other areas where the medical attitude towards opioids is sort of, you know, as Rob said, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. It's not consistent.
And here's what I'll say. Fentanyl and heroin are changing the landscape with the death storm across all of North America and even Central and South America. I talked to somebody in Costa Rica yesterday. 80% of all the users of heroin since 2000 started on prescriptions, and at some point it didn't make it anymore. They got cut off, or the doctor couldn't meet their medical needs. And while Rob says, I'm not going to go shoot heroin, a lot of people are. And sisters are turning sisters on. Other people are saying, hey, I got something works better. You don't have to go back to the doctor. The amount of heroin that's out there is insane. He's absolutely right when he says it's out of control. And the news media is not telling you the truth. My book tells you the truth, tells you the answer, and for 48 hours, it'll be on sale at Amazon.com.
And that's American Narcan, Volumes 1 and 2.
Correct.
All right. East of the Rockies, Joe is in Louisiana. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. Doc, I'm a pharmacist, and I've done a lot of work in the regulatory field. Actually, am a past president of the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy. I want to thank you for the brutal honesty that you've displayed tonight. I can verify everything that you've said. I'm also a parent who knows the pain of losing a child and to this epidemic. You're right. It's a tree. It's not a linear line. It's a tree. The heroin that's out there now, the problem is that these folks that are using it are not just getting heroin. They're getting the fentanyls, the carfentanyls, which are 200 to 300 times more potent than heroin, and end up doing themselves in on what they think is their normal dose. So I just wanted to thank you for the information you shared tonight.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, I know that my presentation is good if I anger people on both sides.
You got it. West of the Rockies, Tom is in Petaluma, California. Tom, good morning.
Thank you for doing this show. And I had a question about CBDs, but, you know, first I wanted to ask for a prayer for Robert Tosh Plumlee. He was a black ops pilot that, you know, exposed Iran-Contra affair with the drugs from our country running it, but he had the bypass surgery. And he's in his 70s now, so I know he could use some prayers. He's recovering well. He's posted about it. Anyways, tomorrow, or actually today's date, there's an article coming out in the New Yorker about how corrupt bankers avoid jail. And I'll be in the New Yorker July 31st. They're talking about how they avoided jail for handling all the drug money, the mass piles of money through the banks. But my question comes into the CBDs from cannabis, where the DEA has declared them a Schedule I drug, like heroin, even though there's no THC, it doesn't get you high, and you can use it for pain relief. I have. And I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tom. William, how do you feel about the use of cannabis as part of this pain management strategy?
He was actually very specific, and he talked about CBD, that's cannabidiol. The caller brings up a really good issue, but he's incorrect. CBD oil is not a Schedule I. It is a cannabis-related product that has been researched and is valid for possible anxiety, possible pain, but it does not have the psychotropic principles behind a full cannabis product. CBD oil is isolated. It is not illegal. Now, it's complicated to obtain and it's expensive because it's hard to extract. But if this government in the United States reaches out and makes a cannabis-related approval in the very near future, it will be a CBD product because it lacks the psychotropic and it has been shown positive in neuropathic pain, other pains, but that's a political hot potato, and it's not Schedule I, and it's not illegal. The other cannabis products are, but CBD isn't.
All right, first-time caller Jim is in Apple Creek, Ohio. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to Coast.
Oh, hello, Richard, and hello, Dr. Marone. I find your program very informative. I've been a drug and alcohol counselor like forever. And what got me thinking about this, I had a horrible toothache about 3 months ago, and I went to the Veterans Administration, and until I got my root canal, I couldn't get any pain medicine, any opiates, or from a civilian dentist. And I think, you know, how some of, they said three doctors in our community had lost their license for over prescribing. Well, I think there should be a bell curve that also three should have lost their license for failure to treat acute pain. I think that's malpractice.
All right, William, your take on Jim's comment.
And there are individual lawsuits where the plaintiffs have gone after providers for undertreatment of pain. And that's one of the reasons why the doctors are running scared like rabbits. If you cut people off and you don't meet their needs, you get in trouble. If you overprescribe, you get in trouble. If you take visits that are too long to try to talk people to work things out, then you're in trouble with your manager and the hospital. So they feel pressure from all ends. This is the unintended consequences of a litigious society and hospitals that are buying up individuals and taking away their individual thought and running the business according to a template.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. Time is tight, but I want to work in Laura here on the wild card line in Cincinnati, Ohio, because we have an opportunity to help somebody here. She has a son addicted to heroin. Laura, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know something about your the procedure you were talking about before and your opinion on Suboxone, or because he's on his third try. Last week he went through withdrawal. We had to call the ambulance because he was shaking so bad and his teeth were chattering. I could hear him across the room. And I mean, this is the third time with Suboxone, and I know he wasn't doing it correctly before, but we were trying to get him into an inpatient place. And it just takes forever to get in there, like 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Dr. Marone, what would you suggest to Laura?
The most important thing is that any drug used in medication-assisted treatment has to be closely linked to psychosocial counseling and cognitive behavioral therapy. If you don't link it to the counseling and they get 12-step principles and they get a sponsor, then it's just another drug and they're likely to misuse it. There are six principles with treatment. Frank detoxification, detoxification with an antagonist, that's Vivitrol, counseling and peer support, that's NA, referral to short or long-term counseling, referral to a methadone clinic, and treatment with Suboxone-like buprenorphine products. Those six principles all hinge on making sure people get the psychosocial support because they have to change the way they think. The drugs don't change the way they think. So if they go to a doctor that's prescribing a medicine and says, I can help you with your addiction, but they don't get the counseling, then it's just a drug. And a young man has the highest risk because they think they're invincible and they really, inpatient might be what you need, 30 days, 45 days, 60 days, because you got to change the way they think. He's at high risk of dying.
Laura, is he getting the counseling?
That's the problem. He wasn't going to the IOP classes and they didn't really mention any counseling.
It's outside the standard of care. You cannot have a Suboxone license. You cannot be waivered unless you really give the counseling. These are not ethical physicians that are prescribing it. They have to put you in counseling. Now, in that case, a prescription for 30 days is an invitation for disaster. Somebody has to be kept on short prescriptions that are earned through counseling.
What should she do? What should she do, William?
Well, I would tend to look at a drug that we use in drug court called Vivitrol. It's a once-a-month injection. It binds to the brain stronger than Suboxone, but the most important thing is in your house, in your purse, in your car, you need Narcan. You need Naloxone. You need it everywhere because your son's at risk of relapse, and relapse for somebody like him means death. You have to have Narcan. You can read my book to see how it's used, pick the different brand, get an injectable, get a nasal spray, get something. You really need that. It's like EpiPens for peanut allergies. You have a son that's at risk of dying, and he needs counseling, and he needs reversal, and he needs
all right, reverse. Laura, I hope that... helps. Dr. Marone, thank you so much for this. I won't say it was an enjoyable 2 hours or fun, but it was certainly enlightening and it had to be done. Thank you so much. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Chris Burrows, Lex Lonehood, Nathan Staten, and Donna Walker, here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scotty Guest, and Michael Downey, thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now from Coast to Coast AM.